Welcome everyone to the AJG monthly podcast. My name is Jasmohan Bajaj. I'm the co-editor-in-chief of the Red Journal, in addition to Millie Long, who's my co-editor-in-chief as well. And we are delighted to have Dr. Sameer Gupta, who's professor of medicine in University of California, San Diego, and also staff physician at the San Diego VA Medical Center. Welcome, Dr. Gupta.
Thank you very much, Dr. Bajaj.
So this is in regards to the study that was published in the Red Journal, which is online right now. The study title is Characteristics of Post-Polypectomy Colorectal Cancer Events and Death. And the first author is Dr. Chin, and the last author is Dr. Sameer Gupta, and the co-corresponding author is Dr. Lin Lee. And this is a very exciting, a little bit sobering study as well. And I'm going to start the questions to Dr. Gupta. What was the reason behind doing this study, Dr. Gupta?
Thanks, Dr. Bajaj. Part of the premise of the study here is when we do polypectomy and we recommend patients to come back 3, 5, 10 years later, there's sort of an implicit promise that the intervention will result in preventing colon cancer development and death. And so when post-polypectomy colon cancers occur, we think we have a responsibility to learn from these events because of this promise that really we've made. We want to know why did this event happen? And is there anything we could have done to prevent it? So, but with this background, while there have been studies looking at post-colonoscopy colon cancer, there had not previously been a study that focused on this subset of patients who've had a polyp removal where we've said we've done a complete exam with adequate prep to learn from what happens in terms of colon cancers occurring after that polyp removal. So our goal was to really leverage a national sample to do two things. One is that we wanted to determine when post-polypectomy cancers are happening. Are they occurring before the time of recommended surveillance? Are they occurring about at the time of recommended surveillance? Or are they happening after? And then the second question is why these cancers occur despite having a complete exam with adequate prep. Are they occurring because we think there's some quality factors like a missed cancer at baseline or a polyp that was incompletely resected where the tissue was allowed to evolve and grow into a cancer? Or could it simply have been a biologic problem where a new cancer developed in between the time of the baseline polyp removal and the follow-up?
Thank you. The study is a little sobering, but I want you to put it in context because obviously none of us are infallible. There was a rate of 396 PPCRC, which is post-polypectomy colorectal cancer events and death. So can you outline the main findings and potentially put it in context?
First of all, let's start with what we did. We developed this cohort of over 500,000 veterans who had had a polyp removal. And as part of a different grant-funded study, we had identified every single person out of that cohort who developed or died of a colon cancer. And then we took a random sample of people who from that baseline cohort. And we did manual chart review to get all the granular data on what the baseline colonoscopy findings were and any exposure to surveillance colonoscopies. So what this means is that we had really good information about what was found, and also we're able to identify those exams that were complete to the cecum and had an adequate prep. So because our interest in this study was in post-polypectomy colon cancer events, we focused just on the people who had colon cancer on follow-up. So this allowed us to identify about 396 people who developed colon cancer and about 90 people who died of colon cancer after having a polyp removal. So while these are big and important numbers, in context of the larger cohort, it's actually a pretty rare event if we think about this coming from a sample of over 500,000 people. So once we had identified these 396 people who had colon cancer after a polyp removal, we first answered that question of did it occur before, at, or after the time surveillance was due. And it turned out that over half, 55% of all the colon cancer events actually happened before the time that surveillance was due. About 12% were diagnosed around the time surveillance was due, and about 33% were diagnosed after surveillance was due. The other thing that we dug into is what were the likely causes? And here we applied these World Endoscopy Organization created guidelines for how to adjudicate or do a root cause analysis of cancers that occur after a colonoscopy. So when we looked at the interval cancers, it turned out that most of them seemed to be more likely to be missed lesions. And the other thing that went along with that is the interval cancers were more likely to be stage four. If you can imagine, 16% of all of the interval cancers that are occurring before the next colonoscopy are due were stage four. So this also supports this idea that a lot of these were missed cancers. When we look at the non-interval cancers, the story was a little different. And there it appeared that these appeared more likely to be newly developed, and a substantial proportion of these were attributable, for example, to people coming late for their colonoscopy. So they weren't getting things on time. And we had similar findings when we looked at the colon cancer deaths.
Thank you. And I think it was important to put it in context that even though it looks like a large number compared to the 500,000 colonoscopies that have been done, and in between, this did include the COVID pandemic. Is that correct? When people often missed their follow-ups?
It did span that period. It did include. We didn't dig into how many of them could have been attributable to the pandemic. That's an interesting question.
So I work at the VA. You also work at the VA. But for our listeners, why did you choose the VA system? Are there advantages or disadvantages to study veterans and their colonoscopies, especially when we talk about generalizability?
The main reason we chose the VA is it's pretty much the only way to ask and answer this question using national healthcare data that could be representative of what's going on across the entire nation. So that's the real advantage of it. Because of the integrated health records, as you know, at the VA, you can get really granular information on healthcare encounters. And so that makes this unique. There are other large healthcare systems where you might be able to get similar data, such as at Kaiser, but they're not nationally representative. The main disadvantage of the VA data is, at least in older veteran groups, it's an entirely male population. So there we have to ask ourselves, do we think we're studying a problem where the health services or the biologic effects might be different for women as compared to men? And if we think it could be different, then the generalizability might be limited. And that's a tough question to answer for colon cancer, because we have seen some differences in screening test performance. My feeling here is that these findings should be still generalizable to women, even though we didn't sample a large number.
Yeah, this is a very important distinction when people are considering their own practice. But this is one of the few places in the U.S. that we can actually have national data. I know other countries have similar things, but I think within the U.S., given all the caveats, I agree with you, this is the best potential database for us to study all of. Now, you did something very interesting using WEO guidelines and other ways, and you alluded to this before, to see whether this post-polypectomy colorectal cancer was a missed cancer or de novo cancer. Can you go into a little bit more depth as to how you adjudicated or you assumed that one of them was actually something that was missed versus something that was just new, was not there at the time of the original polypectomy?
You know, so the criteria here is you basically ask a series of questions. The first question is, for the person who has colon cancer, was that last colonoscopy, the prior one, more than 4 years ago? And if it was more than 4 years ago, then the conclusion is that this is more likely to have been a new colon cancer. And we can debate, you know, about that criteria too. If the cancer is within 4 years of that baseline colonoscopy, then we're told to ask the question, in the same segment of the colon where that cancer was diagnosed, was there an advanced adenoma? Or in our case, we also said, was there an advanced serrated polyp? And if the answer is yes, then the thought there is that might indicate that you had an incomplete, likely incomplete polyp resection. And if the answer is no, then that might represent a possible missed lesion with an adequate exam. I should caution that in our study, we adapted the WEO criteria because our inclusion criteria specified that the baseline exam had to be adequate, so complete to the cecum with adequate prep. Whereas in the larger WEO criteria, if you don't do that selection, then you might also have a category, for example, of a possible missed lesion with an inadequate baseline exam where you don't know, was it missed maybe because the prep was bad or you didn't get to the end, or did you get to the end and then and just didn't see it?
So the question on top of everyone's mind is, were there any specific practitioner, patient, or procedure-related characteristics that you could link, I know these are all associations, given that it was a retrospective review, to someone who developed a post-polypectomy colorectal cancer in your paper?
So I think here we have to look at the larger context here. So we did not find any strong predictors of having, for example, a missed cancer versus one that developed new. But it's important to note that if you look at the adenoma detection rates of the colonoscopists who had these events, over 50% of all the colonoscopists had an adenoma detection rate of less than 30% in this subsample. So already we are drawing a sample of patients who had their colonoscopies done, who had lower than average and a substantial number of people who had inadequate adenoma detection. So when I look at so I think one big picture thing here is to remember the, you know, over 55% of the people who had one of these events, the colonoscopist who did the procedure had inadequate performance in terms of adenoma detection. And that's what I really think is the driver.
So what can we, the readers and listeners of the journal, and others do to reduce this risk, even though it may be small? We try our best to make this as close to zero as possible to ensure that the patients and everyone feel reassured with a negative colonoscopy or a colonoscopy after post-polypectomy. So what should we be doing, especially regarding PrEP and making sure that we are up to our ADR settings, et cetera?
So I think, for one, just the emphasis on baseline colonoscopy quality. If we observe that a substantial number of post-polypectomy events are due to baseline quality factors, such as a missed or incompletely resected lesion, no amount of surveillance can fix that problem. Even if you did a colonoscopy every year or every 2 years, you're not fixing the root cause problem. The root cause problem is you have to do an excellent baseline exam. So get to the end, adequate prep, have an adequate ADR. From a practice standpoint, we have to measure and report. I think many practices are already there. I think looking forward to the future, if you've already done those things, I think there are a couple other things that are available to us. One is we don't do root cause analyses of post-polypectomy cancers. And I think there's a lot to be potentially learned, even if only one person in your group has one every couple of years, to have an opportunity in a non-threatening way to take a look at that case and talk about what could have been done better. And I think really what we need to do that is have systems in place so that when a person has an event like this, that the person who did the original colonoscopy and their colleagues have a chance to review the case and do their own root cause analysis. So some countries have already moved towards this and they're doing this systematically, but in the US, it's really up to individual practices and healthcare systems to set this up. I think the second thing to think about is by understanding the root causes, we can think a little bit more better about the solution. So I mentioned before that we had a substantial number of people had their cancer diagnosed after the time surveillance was due. And we know that only about 50% of people, for example, with advanced polyps come back on time for their surveillance. So again, a systems issue, reminders can help get those people in. Recommending colonoscopies more frequently is not going to solve that problem. It's building the systems around getting people back. And then if we think about people who are having those early cancers, and we've already done the quality issues, there's some other things that we can think about that are a little trickier. So for example, are there some people who might benefit from having an alternative surveillance exam? So there's been some work in the Netherlands and UK, for example, for using FIT as a interval strategy for surveillance. Now, in their context, they're thinking about it. Can we use it to extend surveillance intervals? Is it not inferior to doing colonoscopy-based surveillance if you've done an excellent job at baseline? But there's another advantage that could come along with it, which is it might help level the playing field in terms of some of the colonoscopy quality issues that we have. And for patients who might be at risk for having a post-polypectomy cancer, we could maybe catch those earlier if there is an interval surveillance exam done.
Well, thank you for this comprehensive overview, and Dr. Gupta, and thank you for answering our questions and for being on the podcast. For our listeners, this study is now in press in the American Journal of Gastroenterology, and I urge you to read it and also adopt any of the quality programs that are needed for an adequate colonoscopy documentation from a 360-degree patient, provider, and practitioner-related experience so that we can minimize this already rare occurrence to a much lower level. Thank you again, Dr. Gupta.
Thank you, Dr. Bajaj.